Let's talk to Robert Mays from the Athletic Football Show. He is on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Robert, thank you for joining us. How are you?
Hey, Robert.
Doing all right. How you guys doing?
We are doing good. A lot of people fighting colds up here. We'll tell you that. I think half of our office has a cold right
now. Not me, Robert.
Just not Jeff. That's it.
I'm proud of you, Jeff.
Thanks, buddy.
That's it. He's a gamer, isn't he? I mean, look at him. He can fight through everything. All right, the Browns fought through trying to figure out who their offensive coordinator was going to be. We're going to see Kevin Stefanski calling plays again. But Tommy Rees gets promoted, and you know, Dan and I were talking about some of the stuff that you have out there and this path from tight ends coach to offensive coordinator and how it is definitely trending in the NFL. Thoughts on that?
Oh, I honestly think the Browns are like kind of the epicenter to this in some ways. I actually don't know if Kevin was ever a tight ends coach. He might not have been. But when you look at the way that he's structured his staff over the last 5 years, essentially since he got to Cleveland, like, it's not a coincidence that Drew is a tight ends coach for the Browns. I think that they've always kind of viewed that as like a kind of a little incubator for their coaches that are ideas centric and that really add to the game planning side of it. And so when they were looking to fill that role last year, because obviously Drew moved to quarterback's coach and then moved down to Arizona, I think that when they brought Tommy Rees into the building, it was with the idea of like, we just want ideas like that. He's just going to be an idea centric person. And I think that that transitions from the tight ends coach side of things, because you're involved with the run game and the pass game, obviously. So you see the offense in a more holistic way. And then I think that's a very natural transition to being an offensive coordinator for a play calling head coach, just because it's all about ideas and preparation and game planning, because you're not actually the play caller. So to see that happening in Cleveland specifically, I think it's just kind of a continuation of how they've thought about that staff since Stefanski got there.
It's made me think we're not going to get a complete rollback to the Kevin Stefanski offense with Alex Van Pelt as offensive coordinator. Tommy Rees has a background that I would think, okay, we're going to incorporate some different things here. You think that's accurate, Robert?
I think so. I mean, I think that one of the things I've always appreciated about, you know, Kevin and the way that he sees offense is that he's never been very dogmatic about stuff. I think they probably skewed a little bit too far away from their comfort zone over the last couple of years in order to provide some answers for Deshaun Watson. So I don't necessarily think that that was the best path forward, but I think that the way that Stefanski has approached how to structure the offense has always been with like a real lack of ego. I think that he's open to, you know, my ideas maybe aren't necessarily the best ideas. So with some other offensive coaches, I think that the way that I would frame it when it didn't work out with Watson in terms of how they were trying to set him up for success, you would just say, well, I'm going to go back and I'm going to do it my way now. I just don't think that's how Kevin Stefanski is wired. And so I feel like there's probably a middle ground to be found between what they think is best in a vacuum outside of the scope of Watson and what he would have done in 2020 or 2019. I don't think we'll go all the way back to that place.
So Andrew Berry yesterday said, you know, Myles Garrett, he pretty much wants him here for a long time. And we were trying to figure out, you know, what does that mean? And how far away are the Browns if they're willing to hang on to probably their most valuable piece rather than trading him off to see if they can kind of rebuild? So if he's saying that, it doesn't feel like it's going to be a rebuild. How far away do you think the Browns are in fixing this, and how much work has to get done? And I mean, I think we all know it starts with the quarterback, but how much work and can they fix it quickly?
I think the defense still has the requisite amount of talent to be a good unit. I'm going to be honest with you guys. I every year as we get toward the end of the season, I build myself a little list of questions where it's like, why did this happen? And the Browns defense is like near the top of the list there for me. Like, I did not do enough of a deep dive study during the season about why they had taken a step back. That's truly one of the first things I will start thinking about when the Super Bowl is over. But when you look at the talent on that side of the ball, I still feel like there are definitely enough pieces on that side for this to be a good defense in the right circumstances. On offense, it's a little bit murkier just because the offensive line is a little bit murkier. You know, over a 2-year outlook here, you've got guys that, are we going to keep paying Jack Conklin? Is Joe Bitonio going to retire? Are our succession plans on the offensive line, are those going to work out for us? There's just a lot more uncertainty there than there is on defense. But I think if you can hit on a couple of those, if you can, you know, you get a couple more years out of Bitonio and Wyatt Teller, for example. The receiving talent, I think, showed some flashes last year. Like, I think if you take what Jerry Jeudy and Cedric Tillman did in the back half of the season, you try to project that forward, and you get moderately good and potentially cheap quarterback play, I think that there is a way for this team to be at least relatively competitive in the short term. And if you look at the roster, like, how much different is the roster truly from the roster that we had in 2023 when this was a playoff team? I don't think it's that different.
Robert, the wide receivers had most of those flashing moments with Jameis Winston at quarterback. Is there any way that they even think about bringing him back? I know he was benched. Is there any way they think of bringing him back?
I think it depends on what you want from the position, right? And I also think it depends on what you're going to do in the draft at the position. It feels to me, and this is always going to be dependent on, do you like the guys who are available to you? Like, do you think that Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders, whoever's going to be drafted up there, is a player worth taking? If the answer to that is, like, even almost yes, I think that this offseason specifically is the off-ramp for this team. The way that you can survive what happened with Deshaun Watson is if you can get onto a rookie quarterback timeline almost immediately. Because then if you look at the collective that you're paying the position, it's still relatively similar to what you just would have been paying Watson. And if you're going to continue to restructure his contract and you're paying a combination of Watson and a rookie quarterback, let's say $65 million in cash, whatever, and it would have been 60 for Watson, that's a way to survive. And I think that when you look at Andrew Berry and his history and just how he thinks about a lot of this stuff theoretically, I wouldn't be surprised if the idea of that was attractive for him. If this was a way for them to kind of jump off of one train and onto another without ever really slowing down.
That's interesting. We know Deshaun Watson has the Achilles injury. We know he hasn't played the way he played in Houston here in Cleveland. We know he's owed a lot of money. Do you think he's on the roster next year?
I think he has to be.
Okay.
I mean,
there's no way they
can
figure out how to get rid of him.
Yeah, if you look at the finances of it, I don't know if there's a way that he can't be on the roster next year. And just because of what you're looking at with dead money if you were to move on from him, like, I don't even think it's feasible. I mean, if they made a post-June 1 cut next year, I'm looking at the money right now, that would even be a $119 million dead money hit. I don't know if those numbers are entirely accurate, but I assume they're close. And so you almost have to have him on the team until 2026. If you have him on the team in 2026, then theoretically you would be able to move on from him for the cap number that he's making that year. But you have to have him on the team this year, I think, just because of financial reasons. Whether or not he's actually a part of the team is an entirely different conversation. And if I were the Browns, I don't know what sort of motivation you would have to play him again. Like, this feels like something where the healthy decision would just be to say, this didn't work. This is no longer in our best interest. This is a sunk cost that we can't do anything about. Our energy would be better spent figuring out what the best path forward is for the 2026 and 2027 Browns.
So that said, and I know we've talked a little bit about how do you juggle then what the quarterback room looks like next year? He's just a name on the roster, and then you draft one and you bring in a free agent to get you through the year and then try to figure out how to maneuver the road through fiscal restrictions. I'm just trying to your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think that's probably what you'd have to do. I mean, yeah. So if you look at just the practical reality of it, I think, you know, this team has shown a willingness to do this year in and year out. If you restructure him and you just zero out his contract again next year, it's going to make it more difficult for you over the following 2 years, but it really might be one of your only paths forward to, like, fielding a roster. Yeah. Like, it just seemed like they were going to be willing to restructure his contract into perpetuity because they had planned to do it that way. I assume that's what they'll continue to do. I don't know the answer to that. But my assumption would be they'll do everything they can to move Watson's money around to build the rest of the roster next year and then just live with their decisions in 26 and 27. I think that the financial elements of it are probably easier to project forward than the personality management elements of it. Like, that to me would be the biggest question, is like, if he's on the roster, like, is he there? Like, how do you handle that? And that's why Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski get paid a lot more money than me.
Are you surprised that they're both in their positions after a 3-14 season?
No, I don't think so. I think it's because, one, I think both of them are very competent. I think that they've shown that over time. I think that Andrew Berry is a to me, a very good modern general manager in the way that he thinks about things and how proactive he is about things, the creativity that they've shown. If I was trying to find the right person to put my football team in the best positions to be successful over time, I think the way that he's wired and the way that he approaches this is he'd be worth somebody chasing in that role. Kevin Stefanski won the Coach of the Year twice. I think that that's probably overrated, but I do think that he has shown a real ability to kind of keep the train on the tracks for the most part when things have gone awry. We don't know every detail about the circumstances that led to Deshaun Watson being part of this team. I would have to assume that showing some grace to your general manager and your head coach after the way that last season went and kind of having to acknowledge the Deshaun Watson thing did not work out, that would at least send some signal to me that the people who would be able to fire those two gentlemen may feel some culpability for how this all went. If I can couch that in like six layers of defending myself.
Yes. That makes sense. It makes sense. Robert, who do you like in the Super Bowl?
I think I'd be a moron if I were to continue to pick against the Chiefs. Like I think that's the question I have to ask myself. It's like, Robert, are you a moron? And if the answer is no, then I think I'll probably just keep picking Kansas City. I'll be honest with you guys, because we have the week off, I don't really start digging into the details of the matchup until later this week and into next week when we do most of our coverage of it. I assume by the time I get there, I'll talk myself into the idea of the Eagles being so talented and their defense being so good that this is going to be a tight game and there might be a path forward, and then I will be an idiot again. So if I just listen to my instincts, I think that it's very easy to just say this Chiefs team is very difficult to beat in these sorts of moments because of how well they're coached and because of who their quarterback is, and maybe the rest of that stuff just shouldn't matter that much.
All right, I got one more question for you, too, about the Chiefs in particular, only because it's a Cleveland-based question, too. He knows where I'm going. I read a story this morning about how it might be the right play for the Chiefs to cut Travis Kelce at the end of the season. And maybe just to cut to restructure might be what they might be thinking. I'm just curious what you thought of it. How would that go down if the Chiefs cut Travis Kelce at the end of the year?
Those are difficult conversations, right? Yeah. When you have these legendary players that are getting toward the end. My assumption would be, rather than just cutting him outright, do we have a conversation with Travis Kelce? Where it's like, hey, we care about the optics of this. We care about the relationship here. We've won three straight Super Bowls. You've set all of these franchise records. You're going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. You just got paid however many millions of dollars from Amazon to and Wondery to do that podcast, or whoever paid them to do it.
Right.
You're on all these TV shows. Do you think it's probably time? I think that might be a better way to handle it than like, we're going to release Travis Kelce. And I feel like the Chiefs are the sort of organization who has that stuff in mind.
Plus, Taylor could just pay a salary if they wanted to keep him.
Yeah, sure.
She needs a bodyguard, exactly. Right? At some point, right?
Yeah, we're in a situation now where Travis Kelce's life is very, very different than it was 2 or 3 years ago. And I think that the idea of walking away from football now may be a little bit more palatable to him than it would be when things were different than they are right now.
Robert, as always, thank you. We appreciate your wisdom and the way you see things. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Robert.
Anytime, guys.
All right, and make sure you're checking out The Athletic Football Show, his podcast, and more with Robert Mays is out there. To go get it again, The Athletic Football Show. And, of course, he was on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. All right, over the last hour, we've had Andrew Siciliano. We've had Robert Mays, Siciliano from the Browns Radio Network, who's at the Senior Bowl. Robert Mays, The Athletic Football Show. He's always a great guest and always has just amazing insight into the game and does a lot of deep dive stuff as far as just trying to really think through things. So if you want to listen to either one of those interviews, if you missed them, Baskin and Phelps podcast, available on the Odyssey app. You can always check that out. I want to go back to something Andrew said in 10:40 hour or 10:40 around last hour, and it was about the number two pick, and it has to do with the quarterback. And Jeff, you kind of wanted to dive in because it's the whole notion of it. You have the number two pick, and I don't want the Browns to use that pick out of fear that they're going to miss out on a quarterback. when they know they're not taking the best player available that could impact the organization for years to come, rather than saying, oh my, we don't have a quarterback, let's force it, and let's just roll the dice on someone who might need to be coached up more than we're expecting to. And yet, we know how this thing goes. When that happens, they tend to throw those guys out there too early. They don't wait. And we all have expectations for someone who was picked number two overall. And we're like, well, why isn't the number two pick out on the field? I don't understand. And it is my number one pet peeve when it comes to this franchise and organization.
Do you think Myles Garrett's any good?
I absolutely think he's good.
You think he's as good as any defensive player in the NFL?
Yes.
How'd they go 3-14?
It doesn't change how I feel about him as his ability to be able to play the game.
No, that's how'd
they go? Because he only plays on one side of the ball.
And what happened on the other side of the ball?
It was a failure.
And why was it a failure?
Well, I can give you a number of reasons, starting with the beginning of the year when the offensive line was dealing with injury and left tackle has been an issue.
Keep going.
There are a lot of things going on there. Do you want me?
What was the biggest issue?
A quarterback, obviously.
Done. That's why, as Andrew Siciliano just told us at 10:40, and if you missed it, shame on you, but you can go back and listen to it on the Odyssey app. If you like a guy at two, and you think if you like a quarterback, you take him at two, and then you go sign the veteran. And I couldn't agree with Andrew more. The more I look into this, the more I keep watching tape of guys, the more I keep thinking about it. I'll bet you a Coke Zero from downstairs. The Titans are going to take Shedeur Sanders or Cam Ward at number one, and the Browns are going to take the other guy at two.
All right, you said something that was very important, and I'm going to ask you this question, and this has nothing to do with your unbelievable wife. If you just liked your wife, would you have married her?
Nope.
Okay, but you love your wife. That's why you married her, right?
Yep.
Okay, you said something about that number two pick, and this is the reason why I hesitate on taking a quarterback. It's exactly what you said.
But my job wasn't on the line.
What's worse, the rest of your life or the next few years?
My job wasn't on the line.
If
these guys don't get a guy in here who can play competent quarterback, as Robert Mays just told us. I mean, listen to Siciliano. Listen to Mays.
Yeah, I'm listening.
Siciliano said if you really like one of these guys, you take him at two.
No,
Mays said if you don't get it right, you're out of here. They've got to get a guy in here. And then they've got to go sign the veteran. And to me, it's mix and match, any combination. You draft whoever Tennessee doesn't, if you like him, and then you go sign Carson Wentz or Daniel Jones or Kirk Cousins or Russell Wilson or Justin Fields. And that guy plays for a year, year and a half, half a year, whatever. You win some games with that guy, and that gets Kevin, as I agree with Robert Mays, by the way. Kevin should be the coach, and Andrew Berry should be the GM until they stack two terrible seasons together, which they've not done, and I don't think they will.
So here's where I think the mistake is. I'm not drafting someone I just like at two. I better love them at two. I need to be in love with the pick. Okay, I take it number two.
All right.
Because we all know the pressure that comes with drafting someone in the top five.
But if you really like one of those quarterbacks, Andy.
Like isn't enough. I need love out of the quarterback.
What if you don't love Travis Hunter or Abdul Carter?
Well, I do love Abdul Carter, so I have no problem drafting him at number two. I don't, but it's not my job.
Well, you're not drafting anybody. No, neither am I.
And I also can believe in my quarterback coach and my offensive coordinator that if I don't take that quarterback with my number two pick,
that they can coach up Carson Wentz?
That they can coach up someone else that they can draft later in the draft, even second round.
Bring me Trey Lance.
You take so much pressure off your quarterback.
I got the hots for Trey Lance.
Yeah, good for you. I'm just saying you take so much pressure off your quarterback if you don't take them early in the first round. You give them the chance to develop.
We're expecting you to come in and not be very good.
That's not. Well, no, that's
you're going to enjoy.
That's what happens when you like your quarterback.
You're going to enjoy playing for Mike McCarthy in 2026.
hi, we don't think you're very good. That's what you're saying to me when you like a quarterback at number two.
Oh, well, you're not going to tell anybody. Not the best. We didn't love him. We liked him, but we figure, what the hell? You're not going to say that.
Well, aren't you saying that by having to bring in a veteran at the same time?
No, you're not going to start a guy. Maybe.
See what I'm saying? That's a like thing, not a love thing. Dan, am I speaking your language on this one? Because I think we speak the same language on this.
We speak the same language.
Not Phelpsian.
We're not going in. We're operating in fear.
You're the one operating.
Quarterback.
It's not fear. I look at these quarterbacks and I go, okay, are these guys stars in the league? And I watch the two of them play and I go, okay, Cam Ward's got the arm to do it. Okay, this could make sense, but his footwork's a mess. His decision-making is a little bit slow, and he probably needs to sit for a little bit.
Like Favre.
Right, like Favre. But what happened with Favre?
He sat for a year.
Damn right.
That's why you sign Carson Wentz or Kirk Cousins or Daniel Jones or Russell Wilson and bring him in and play him.
It took a team buying in, trading a pick, bringing them in here, and Mike Holmgren attaching himself to that guy and going, if I go down, I'm going down with you.
Yeah.
Are you going down with Cam Ward?
Yes. Yes, yes. Excellent question, my friend.
Are you going to hitch your wagon and go down with Cam Ward or go up with Cam Ward?
You mean me personally?
Hell yeah. You're the one I'm talking to.
Ooh.
Wow. I got a hell yeah.
Cold in here, man.
I got a hell yeah.
Jeff, it's no longer 30 degrees. It's now -5 in the studio.
I've kind of told you guys exactly what I want to do. Nobody wants to hear it.
Oh, no. I've heard it, and I'm worried that you need some kind of vaccination for the Trey Lance love. Like, they got shots to solve that problem.
No. Ultimately, this is what I want to do. I am not a quarterback evaluator for a living. If they decide that, and it's either Shadur or Cam Ward, okay? It's one of those two guys. If it's one of those two guys and they decide that he's going to be a really good quarterback for a long time, then they take him, okay? Otherwise, you draft Jackson Dart. You trade back in. You draft Jalen Milroe. You trade back in because you're going to have to do that. They're probably not going to be around at 33. And then you do what appeals to me more than anything that nobody likes. And it's you sign two guys, and you sign, and they're interchangeable. This is the bad thing, and I've laid this out. I think people have heard this. You sign from this column,
right?
Russell Wilson or Carson Wentz or Daniel Jones or Kirk Cousins or Aaron Rodgers, and then from this column, you sign Zach Wilson or Trey Lance or Kyle Trask or Justin Fields, and you bring those two guys in here with a young guy who you drafted, Kyle McCord in the third round, fourth round, and you have three guys then.
I'm taking Will Howard.
Will Howard. That's fine. Sure, fine. One for the present, a young guy who's been in the league who once was really highly thought of. I mean, Kyle Trask was a second-round pick. We're going to find a guy in the second round. Why not Kyle Trask? He's 6'5". He's a beast.
Okay.
All right, Baker beat him out in Tampa. Well, Baker's played pretty damn well in Tampa, hasn't he?
Sure. Pro Bowl, right?
Throwing around foul language today.
Yeah, no, we are, aren't we?
Yeah.
Well, nothing we have to dump.
We've become a PG-13 show.
You can go hell and damn and not get dumped.
That's a valid point.
I don't know about you guys.
Once past that, you're dumpable.
Your mom told us about it. Yeah. Told you about it.
I feel dirty
the veteran who I've, the big veterans who I've talked about.
Yeah.
You get the Scrubinis who have flamed out as the second pick in the draft, the third pick in the draft.
Right.
The 11th pick in the draft, Justin Fields, you bring them in, and then you draft a guy in the second, third, or fourth round, and you see if you can't coach him up.
I'm okay with that.
That gives you three quarterbacks, all of whom might be playable.
Here's the problem.
All of whom. Bring in Dylan Gabriel.
That gives you four quarterbacks.
Yeah, because Deshaun Watson's still here. Except he's going to be on every injury list known to man.
I was going to say,
he's not even going to be – he's not taking a snap next.
If he takes a snap in 2025, I'll be floored.
If he takes another one with the Browns, I'll be floored.
Yeah.
Because of his injury situation, you're able to dump him.
Yeah.
Now you got to pay him, but I mean, dump him out of your mindset.
Yeah.
So unless you just gotta have Shadur Sanders or Cam Ward, and it wouldn't surprise me if the Browns think they do. See, that's the thing. Then you get my plan. Big time veteran who's been out there and has played a lot. There are guys out there. Coach them up. Veteran who has not done very well, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, Justin Fields, Kyle Trask. And draft some guy, second, third, or fourth round. Boom, you got three quarterbacks. Hopefully all three of them might be able to become something. And at the very least, one of them will become something for the next couple of years. Done.
I can get behind that. See,
there you go.
I'm okay with it, too. I don't have a problem with
that's
this.
That's the plan that makes the most amount of sense. If you're diehard, I'm taking a quarterback at two, and you don't follow it up immediately with, we are going to bring in a veteran quarterback to let this guy sit and take his time.
You must do it.
You are whipping him to the wolves.
Exactly. You must do it.
That's the problem.
You're going Bronny James is what you're doing.
How quick do you... I mean, I'm just... I'll leave you with this.
You went 3-14 for a reason.
Exactly.
It wasn't just because of your quarterback.
And I'm still waiting to see what Minnesota does and maybe trying to trade two for J.J. McCarthy.
Because if you have a top-tier defense and your defense plays at that top-tier level, I said Robert Mays, there's a great thought that he had on the whole thing with this defense and what went wrong there. If your defense plays at that top-tier level, you're not that bad. You're not 3-14 bad. So if you bring that defense up and you bring that offense to average, now we're having a conversation about where this team can go.
I hear where you guys are at. I'm going to ask you this question when we come back after the break. And I still want to talk a little bit more about what Robert Mays had to say because we haven't even gotten into that yet. If the Browns do decide to draft a quarterback at two, how fast does he need to be on the field? 216-474-0092, Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan.
Jeff Phelps, Andy Baskin, Dan Menigan, Meredith Kane. Happy to be with you here. We've been talking a little quarterback. Why? Because, my God, they need one, and by God, they have the second pick of the draft. Mike is in North Olmsted. Hello, Mike.
First of all, thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
To you guys today.
Thank you.
You do a great job. I really enjoy it.
Well, thank you. We appreciate you listening.
My pleasure. I agree with you. We need a quarterback, number one priority, but something that's very obvious in these playoffs. Got to have a great defense. And definitely got to have a running game. And you see what Shaquan Barkley has done, what Derrick Henry has done. I mean, Cook with the Bills. We definitely have got to find a really good running back in this draft. Where do you think we should draft one? And do you have any idea who's out there? Thank you.
Mike, thank you very much. Yes, they need a running back. Unfortunately, they need definitely one. And you can't bank on Nick Chubb. We'd like Nick to come back, be healthy. Who knows? I hope he is. This injury that is coming back from Andy is minor compared to what he came back from last year. Maybe he just needs, you know, maybe it'll give him the extra time that he needs. I think you can go get a running back, Mike, third or fourth round. It's supposedly a deep running back draft.
Oh, you can't tell me there isn't anybody here that wouldn't be happy with either of the Ohio State running backs. Trayvon Henderson or Quinshon Judkins, either one of them.
I think that's true, but they're not the highest rated guys in the draft. Judkins is higher rated than Trayvon, actually, by most folks. I personally think you go out and you sign somebody in free agency. I've seen Rico Dowdle from Dallas attached to the Browns. I think, really? Guy that I think might be interesting, and he'll get cut because of a guarantee in his contract, and he's not the guy there anymore. I think Miles Sanders is interesting, who was in Philadelphia, went to Carolina on a free agent deal, and then got beat out there by Chuba Hubbard after Sanders got dinged up and Chuba Hubbard, and they drafted Jonathan Brooks, who retore his ACL. They're not going to pick up the option on Miles Sanders, and he's already said, and I love it. After the last game of the season, he had a good last game, and he said something about running back starting, and he said, you know, I showed everybody, said, I, you know, this was an, because somebody asked him, what are you doing today? And he said, hey, this was an audition, not just for Carolina, but for everybody else in the league. And then he used some colorful language and basically said, I'm not doing that coming off the bench thing again. But he used some colorful language.
Sure.
And I thought, yeah, that's awesome. I think he'd be a nice addition for the Browns.
Here's the other thing,
Najee Harris from Pittsburgh has just keep stacking up 1,000-yard seasons, even though he doesn't average 4.5 yards a carry. He's available. There are a lot of free agent guys out there. Elijah Mitchell, who was really good in San Francisco and who Kyle Shanahan calls an absolute beast, he's out there. A.J. Dillon, free agent from the Packers, he's out there. some of these guys are going to hit somewhere and be good.
Well, you're also spending money there, though. Here's the reason.
Yeah, but not much money, Andy. They're running backs, they're free agents, and they need gigs.
I agree with that, but I also think I don't know. I tend to want to lean younger on a running back, especially if you don't feel
like... Oh, they're going to. They'll draft one, and they're going to sign one in free agency. They'll do it.
Yeah, you've got 100 through 103, right? So you've got, what, four picks, five picks through 103? You're going to tell me one of those guys isn't going to be a running back? Of course he is.
I would think there's a really good chance
93,
of that.
67, 33, and 2.
But take a look around the league. You have guys at running back who are doing competent work who are 5th, 6th round picks. So you're saying
you want a competent guy that can
I would love Saquon Barkley.
To see what happens with Nick? Yeah, no, I think we'd all love Saquon
I'm
Barkley.
I am eliminating Nick Chubb from my thought process.
Mm.
And why am I doing that? Only because of this. I'm not counting on him. I would love to count on Nick Chubb. He's phenomenal. I think he has Hall of Fame talent, and his injuries have kept him from realizing that. I think he has Hall of Fame talent. But I can't count on him. If he comes back next year and he's Nick Chubb again, Andy, well, then I've got Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery because I'm adding somebody else. And I'm adding somebody else who's serious, who I can go ahead and say, yep, I've got a number one running back. And if Nick Chubb comes back, it's like, oh, I have two number one running backs. That's what I would love to see happen here.
I get it. All right, let me go back to that question I asked you when we went to the break, especially when it comes to a quarterback. Let's just say the Browns do draft a quarterback. Like you are leaning towards that.
They are
right?
drafting a quarterback somewhere.
Okay, let's just say they draft
and
one.
And they're drafting a running back somewhere.
At two, quarterback. What is the pressure to get them on the field?
You and I differ on this. I don't think there's any question if you take a guy at two, you're going to play him sooner rather than later. But you don't have to put him out there for game one. And everybody knows that he's going to be the guy. So you put him out there when you think he's ready to succeed. And because you know he's going to be the guy. So I don't think there's pressure, Andy, and you don't put him out there when you think he's going to fail. If it takes half the season before you put him out there, then it takes half the season. You know, Patrick Mahomes sat his first year in Kansas City, and they had a competent quarterback who could play, Alex Smith. And I think the Browns are going to have that. If they draft a quarterback at two, they're gonna sign a veteran free agent who can come in and win you some games. That it's going to happen. And so I know that you feel that there's huge pressure. The pressure to me is making the pick. The minute you make it, you know he's going to be the guy. It's just a matter of when. But then you also have to sign the right quarterback, and you'll do that before the draft, of course. Right? And I would think you don't pull a Kirk Cousins in Atlanta and sign him for the ungodly contract that they signed Cousins for in Atlanta coming off a torn Achilles, and then draft Penix without telling Cousins. I would assume the Browns don't make that mistake. I would assume that they're going to sign the veteran free agent quarterback. Maybe it's Jameis. I would doubt it, but maybe it is. And say, hey, we're going to draft a quarterback somewhere. It might be at two. It might be at 33. It might be in the fourth round. But no, we're going to draft somebody. So if you want to take this gig under that circumstance, go ahead.
I just think, and it is a natural tendency of all ownership across any sport, that when you draft someone extremely high, you want to see them play sooner than later. And I think if they draft a quarterback at two, and let's say they do bring in a veteran to come in and start the season, I think most teams can ease back and go, okay, we can go 3-4 games into the season and not start the brand new toy we just got, right? Like, okay, we can hold off. We can wait. Green Bay is one of the few franchises I've seen that it has the patience. And having that patience, that franchise has been rewarded with victories. I know you don't want me to go back and look at what the Browns have done historically. I just can't see ownership here in town saying, we're drafting a quarterback at two and we're going to let him sit for a year, year and a half. I don't see it.
Except for one thing.
You can accept anything. I'm just telling you what I think. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I know, but that's what we do here. You say what you think, and I say what I think, and Dan says what he thinks, and then callers tell us what they think.
Yes, except for one thing.
It's this.
And I rarely think.
That's
it's
true.
This. Hasn't ownership shown incredible patience over the last several years?
On everything else except for quarterback.
No, they have.
Where's your quarterback patience?
Because they've been sitting there watching Deshaun Watson not play very well. They haven't had a choice, maybe, but they also haven't completely freaked out about it. Because if they had, they would have fired their coach and GM. And as Robert Mays said, we don't know exactly who said this guy is going to be our quarterback. It's easy for the owner just to say, yeah, let's just say the Haslams insisted on Deshaun. Okay, well, how could they bail on it? Yeah, they could fire the coach and the GM. You guys didn't make it work, so it's not on you. They've been very patient.
Here's what I'm going to say. That.
And they're patient now because these guys just went 3-14 and they're both still in place.
Jeff, I think if they were truly patient on the quarterback situation, they would have hung on to Flacco in the offseason last year and stayed the course with him until they thought Deshaun was there or left both guys here.
I don't think that was an ownership call.
Well, I'm just it doesn't. It's an organizational call, whether it's ownership or not.
But they signed a different Joe Flacco.
They signed a different Joe Flacco. I'll give you that. Who didn't have established victories with the franchise already? Is that a fair way to put it?
Yeah, that is fair. But
true patience would have been to hang on to Flacco to see what happened with Deshaun, and then have to battle through and try to figure out, what should we do here? And if
Jameis was similar enough to Flacco, Andy, I think they kind of did that.
I don't know. I don't feel the same way about it. And you know, and Jameis did have, you know, has had some significant seasons before he came here, but then we saw what it was when he came here, and then people were like, well, maybe Jameis is the future, and that changed about 3 weeks later, 2 weeks later. It's just everyone's impatient when it comes to the quarterback.
Yes.
I mean, even to look here and see that, you know, Baker was here for four seasons is out of the norm for the organization.
I will say this until the end. You can talk me into a quarterback at two if you're also going to tell me that you are going to walk out on that dais and you are going to say that veteran quarterback X is our starter and we will be bringing along the other quarterbacks slowly and just put the whole thing to bed.
I think that's going to happen.
Because
personally, I think that is. And I think we'll see that when free agency starts, when they sign a guy who you think, wow, that's a pretty good signing.
But if you start playing that game of, oh no, we're going to have an open competition in camp and we're going to do all of these, you know, different things and we're tracking through, that's where you start getting yourself in trouble because then you don't have a definitive plan.
But if a guy comes in, let's just say you draft him at two, and he comes in and he's really, really good in camp. He's really good in, you know, over the summer. He's really good in preseason and they deem him ready. Well, then you play him. But I
know.
It worked in Washington, I know Jaden Daniels is considered a better prospect than anybody's draft.
I was going to say that.
I know that, but you know, Bo Nix wasn't considered the best of prospects.
But that was the handpicked successor of Sean Payton.
Well, and luckily he was still on the board there.
Luckily, everybody looked at him like he was nuts.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of my point. You know, nobody thought that he was ready to play. They thought he was, you know, the experienced older college guy who's just like hanging on. But Peyton liked him, so he played him.
Right. If Kevin Stefanski bangs the table and says, this is my guy, we're doing this.
Well, good. It'll be his job if it doesn't work.
So you would rather go down that road of Kevin Stefanski banging the table and saying, this is my guy, let's roll.
I want them to have somebody that they believe in and they put on the field and he plays well. I don't care where they find him. I don't. If they find him at two, great. Go. Do it. If they find him in the body of Kirk Cousins with half an Achilles, fine. Play him. If they find him in Zach Wilson, who was god-awful for the New York Jets, but has spent the last year sucking up everything he can from Sean Payton, great. Start him. I don't care. Believe in somebody and put them on the field and let's go win some football games. It shouldn't be this dang difficult. It really shouldn't. Obviously, it has been, but it shouldn't be this difficult. And I truly think there are great options at all three levels. And you know my three levels. Draft, veteran who's been around, and veteran who has not done very well yet. I think they're great options at all three levels. Ones that intrigue me. Let them figure out which one and then go for it. It shouldn't be that difficult.
All I know is that if they draft a quarterback at two, I hope that they could break the mold of what's been going on here and have a quarterback who could be here for 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be new. That would be breaking
new. Which, by the way, you could also do with a guy like Daniel Jones or Carson Wentz. So, I mean, there are three levels here. Pick which one works and do it. Let's go.
All right. Well, see, the other thing that happened at the scene yesterday, too, was Andrew Berry was interviewed about Myles Garrett. He's not going to trade him. That's what he said. So what does that mean about how far away they think they are from contention? If you're going to hang on to him, how far away are they? Plus, Chris Rose joins us in the next hour. Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan.